Welcome to the Conversations About Consultation podcast. I'm Zara Ahmed, and you're here listening to some of the conversations that myself and my co-hosts, Dr. Emily Kanade, Jessica Rowley, and Emily Crosby have had with guests from around the world about consultation and psychology. We all have a keen interest in consultation and hope that this podcast offers a platform to discuss different views about the topic and future directions for consultation. We hope that you enjoy listening to these episodes, and if you'd like any further information or are interested in being a guest, please feel free to let us know or get in touch via email or Twitter. On today's episode, we're very lucky to have with us Dr. Anwen Marshall, who currently works as an educational psychologist at Bristol City Council. Anwen has worked at Bristol City Council since September 2021, when she qualified from the Doctorate in Child and Educational Psychology from Bristol University. Anwen has always been interested in person-centred work and is currently a person-centred champion at her local authority. Being a person-centred champion means that she supports person-centred work within the service and with her colleagues. Before training as an educational psychologist, Anwen worked as an assistant educational psychologist, where she was based full-time in a primary school for 2 years. We were so lucky to have Anwen with us, and we really enjoyed speaking about her amazing research, and we really hope that you enjoy listening as well. Hi Anwen, it's so lovely to have you here today. We were wondering if you could start a little bit about yourself and your journey to becoming an educational psychologist.
Hi, yeah, nice to be here as well. So I guess it's one of those things that when you think back on everything, you sort of see how the pieces of the puzzle came together. So when I was when I was a teenager at secondary school, my mum was a special educational needs coordinator, SENCO, and I think she was the one who told me about an educational psychologist and what that job was, and probably when I was studying psychology at A level. And so I remember being really interested in that and what that was, and being from a family who are pretty much all teachers and work with children and young people, I sort of probably knew that I wanted to go down a similar route. So I guess that might be sort of where the journey started for me. And then sort of studying psychology at A level, and then I went on to go and do psychology at university as my undergraduate degree. And as part of that, we got to do a one-year placement year. And that was something I was looking for when I was studying, is to do that placement year. So I did a one-year placement year with an educational psychology service to sort of see what that was like, I suppose, and really enjoyed it. Got to see lots of different things that educational psychologists were doing. And yeah, really liked to roll and thought, yeah, this is for me. And I suppose whilst I was at university as well, doing lots of work where I could volunteer in sort of in schools, sort of like some mentoring for some young people. So I think I've always sort of had that interest, and then doing that year at university sort of confirmed to me that was something that I did want to sort of pursue. So yeah, and then following on from that, after I graduated from my psychology degree, I went and worked as an assistant psychologist for private educational psychology company in London. And as part of that, I was based full-time. I did that for 2 years, and I was based full-time in the school, in one school, sort of working there, working alongside the educational psychologist when they were in, and sort of whilst they weren't in, supporting to implement and put into place sort of some of the recommendations or interventions that were sort of recommended and working with particular young people. As part of that as well, you know, getting young people's views and voices and thinking about that then. So I feel that that's sort of been my journey, because then after that 2 years, then that's when I got onto the training course. So yeah, I guess it did start quite early on, and probably things that I didn't even realise at the time were guiding me down the pathway of being an educational psychologist.
It's amazing. It sounds like kind of like teaching and learning and educational psychology has kind of been in your life, your whole life almost.
Yeah.
I guess we were kind of wondering about what kind of initially got you interested in consultation and kind of young people's involvement with consultation, and if there were any like key critical moments or like experiences you had with consultation yourself.
Absolutely. So I think I knew about consultation before I knew about it, if that makes sense. So when I was working sort of as an assistant psychologist and sort of in my placement year at university, I saw consultation meetings, but I didn't know it was called that at the time. And so I guess then when I then learned about it more on the doctorate in university, then it's all sort of fitted together and I could put a name to what I'd been seeing. But I guess thinking about interest in consultation first, generally, yeah, when we did that university and it fit together, and it I think it really fit with sort of my values of sort of bringing everyone together, being collaborative, and yeah, sort of using sort of those problem solving skills, and you know, that being sort of a collaborative process. I think that really sort of fit with my values and resonated with me and what I thought would help. And I remember being really interested in that, and then sort of then learning about that university, then on placement, seeing examples of that, and it sort of being a really successful process. And yeah, and I suppose the service that I was on placement in for my first year, you know, had a consultation model. So, you know, I got to see that in practice a lot. And yeah, my supervisor was using that a lot and coming back and doing lots of reviews as well as part of that. So I could really see the value in it. And I suppose that sort of struck my interest. And then I suppose as well, when I was training in my second and third year at university, it was during COVID and we went all virtual. And so consultation did become quite a, you know, even though it was a huge part before, I mean, we became even sort of more reliant on those consultation meetings where we were doing things virtually and getting everyone sort of online together, you know, so it sort of put even more value in that, I think. And I was doing a lot of that whilst I was working virtually. And then again, returning to it when I came back to being in person was like a whole new thing, because there's all that body language and the things that you miss out online. But yeah, so I think I've always sort of, you know, seen that, and it's been quite a big part of my sort of training as well, with the context of COVID in there. And I suppose, like, thinking about, you know, children, young people's views and sort of them being in meetings and things like that, I suppose, again, that interest started when I was an assistant psychologist. I suppose more thinking about the annual review process, because I was involved quite a lot in that and sort of gaining young people's views beforehand. But I started to sort of think about, well, why do we have to do this separately? Can we not have the young person in the meeting? What would that look like? And again, sort of experiences on placement, sort of seeing sometimes young people being invited to meetings, sometimes that being successful, sometimes it being less successful, but also then sometimes seeing it and sometimes not. And I suppose it sort of got me wondering about, you know, involving young people in meetings as well, and why we might do it and why we might not do it. So yeah, I suppose that's sort of been where my interest in consultation has come from, and thinking about involving young people in that as well. And then I suppose since I've qualified as well, you know, I've been trying to sort of involve young people as much as I can. And part of that sort of where I'm working now is I'm sort of a person-centered champion, we call it. So, you know, I'm quite interested in person-centered work and having young people present and using lots of person-centered frameworks like PATHS, like Planning Alternative Tomorrows with Hope, or MAPS, Making Action Plans. So it's a big part of my work, I think, and how, you know, what I value.
No, it's really interesting. One question I guess I had was, definitely when I was training, and there was this sort of idea that consultation meant working directly with adults, and the involvement in children, young people kind of wasn't really so much I don't even know what the word would be. It wasn't really a thing that people would be thinking about. The focus of consultation was the adults getting together. Is that something that you've come across, and how people have constructed consultation, that consultation means not including children and young people? And yeah, how have you kind of managed that experience with people?
Yeah, I think it has definitely come up. And when I was doing my research as well, sort of when people were giving responses, it was interesting to see that some people kind of felt that was an adult. And I suppose when I looked at some of the definitions of it, one of the things that was coming up was thinking about those who are most concerned or most involved. And actually, the child or young person is probably most concerned in their own needs and self. So that's, I suppose, where I started to wonder about that. But yeah, I've definitely heard that as well, and thinking around, well, it's normally with the adults. And yeah, I guess it is thinking about, well, who is that person most concerned? If someone was having a conversation about you, would you want to be there? Would you want to be involved? I suppose that's how I've always sort of thought about it, because I know I would feel better if I was there in a conversation about me. So I suppose that. And, you know, I think as well, especially when working with schools, it can come up quite a lot that people feel, could that young person cope with it? Could that child cope with that meeting? And that I have to sort of think and help understand and work around whether that's appropriate and what people's worries are and how to address those worries. I'm thinking about how we could actually have those conversations with the young person there and sort of guiding that. And it takes a long time sometimes. It's not a quick process. It can take a little while, and sometimes seeing it in person for someone and seeing that young person there and being in a meeting can actually be one of the more effective things, I think, but then trying to explain why it might be helpful. Let's see and let's have a go. And that can help, I think, sort of challenge some of those attitudes that people might have around feeling that the young person shouldn't be there.
So your study, which is absolutely fantastic, well recommend a proper and thorough read of us, was on educational psychologists' perspectives of the involvement of children and young people in consultation meetings. Zara and I were talking just before you came on, and went about why that? What was the thing that you wanted to, what sparked your interest in doing that for your doctoral thesis?
Yeah, so I think I'd been sort of in preparation for thinking about my thesis. I'd been reading a few studies and I knew that I was really interested in consultation and sort of that being such a huge part of my work, at least, and for lots of educational psychologists as well. And I suppose I started reading a few studies and I started thinking, well, where is the young pupils' views in this? Or perhaps one study I read as well mentioned about, oh, it'd be great to get young people's views on this. And I suppose it started to get me thinking, are young people being involved in consultation meetings? How often is that actually happening? And I suppose that's where those questions that I was sort of discussing with my thesis supervisor at the time started to come up, and thinking about that. So I suppose that's sort of where that came from. And then thinking, well, actually we need to find out a bit more about what is happening out there, what are people's perceptions of this, and how could we do that successfully? Yeah, and finding out what's happening, and if people are involving young people, how do they do that? Because there was maybe one study out there from educational psychologists specifically around actually involving young people in the consultation meetings. So it was actually that there was not much out there at all, really. There's lots out there in terms of like young people being involved in other types of meetings or as part of their educational health and care plan assessments, but not specifically the consultation meetings that we have. So I think seeing that wasn't there really sort of sparked that as a, you know, a real area of interest for me, and thinking I'd love to know more about this. So,
and two things that you did, you know, one, a kind of a survey of 100 people, so it feels like you've got kind of a good broad range of views there, and then a really lovely kind of deeper dive down and a kind of a thematic analysis of something a bit more in depth. And I kind of wanted to start really with some of the survey findings that you had for exactly that point about, well, what are people actually doing? What's going on out there? How do people kind of perceive this? And, you know, one very striking thing about your sort of phase one analysis was that people definitely thought it was a good idea and it should happen, but perhaps wasn't happening as much. So there's kind of espousing how important it would be, but perhaps the in-use being a little bit more complicated. And yeah, I was just wondering if you'd speak a little bit to A, the discrepancy between we think we should, but it's very challenging in practice, and perhaps maybe what some of the barriers and facilitators were to including children and young people in consultation.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was sort of one of the follow-up questions that I had as well. And, you know, now as well, seeing it myself in practice and thinking about, so I think there's, I guess, thinking about the various things that came up and facilitators, I suppose, were thinking about individual factors to do with the young person. Like people were thinking about the age quite a lot, or their needs, needs, especially as we're working with young people with a whole different range of needs, like their language and communication skills be within that meeting. So that's what a lot of the educational psychologists said. I guess, suppose things systemically, like the amount of time that we have to do that and to think about that and to be able to do that piece of work well, I suppose, which might include, and we might talk about this more later, but, you know, that preparation of that young person and those going to be involved in that does take a lot of time. And sometimes people don't have the time to do that and that kind of thing. And attitudes came up as quite a big one. And it was quite interesting because I think in my research, the educational psychologist who did the survey often mentioned the attitudes of like the parents or the school staff and feeling that maybe a young person couldn't be involved. But they didn't say their own attitudes, but I sort of wondered if that sort of came into a little bit as well, that actually sometimes we might feel like young people can't be involved, like we say, because of their age or because of their language skills. And that might be an attitude that sometimes we need to challenge in ourselves, like how could we adapt that situation actually so that we can, you know, make sure a young person's involved even if they do have those difficulties. Or sort of even things like, you know, I think it was if safeguarding, you know, like safeguarding concerns and, you know, thinking about how we could overcome that a bit. And sort of one of the things that I sort of spoke about in my research as well was that idea of sort of like participation rights over protection rights, and thinking a little bit about that. And sometimes we might want to really protect young people and children, but how do we balance that with their participation rights, and the fact that, you know, as sort of the United Nations Rights of the Child says, you know, children and young people have a right to be involved in decisions about them and to be part of those conversations. So how do we balance that with trying to protect them, I suppose, which came up quite a lot. So I think that's sort of possibly a barrier as well when thinking about this idea that we want to maybe sort of make sure children are safe and protect them. You know, that is positive. We want children to feel safe, but how can we also make sure that they're participating whilst doing that? So yeah, I think those would be sort of some of the main things that maybe came up as facilitating barriers. So attitudes of others as well. You know, if a school's really on board with that, then that maybe is easier to then have that young person there. Or from my experience as well, if a school's seen that quite a lot, then it was quite good for them to then be able to do the preparation work or the work around the meeting with that young person. Yeah, and thinking about individual sort of child factors, their age, but also things like time, and realistically being able to do those things as part of your job, I suppose.
Yeah, that point around participation felt really important, that it wasn't the idea that you just sort of 5 minutes before a meeting was due to happen that you'd say to a young person, "Oh, why don't you come along?" And I just wondered whether you would just expand a little bit about kind of the point around preparation and its importance and significance, and that being involved in something isn't just about the meeting itself. It's obviously quite a bit about what might go on both before and after.
Yeah, so that's something that came out as quite a big factor in my research, but also that I think quite a lot about now in my own work, that yeah, in to be able to successfully sort of involve that young person in that meeting, being able to prepare them for it is important. Being able to get their consent, I suppose, in preparation for that, and to have that informed consent, I suppose the young person ideally needs to understand what they're coming into, what that's going to look like, to be able to say yes or no to wanting to do that, and also having time to think about that, because it might be quite a big decision for them to make. And so having that time, so that's really important, I suppose, in the first step of preparation, is making sure that you've got that understanding and that consent there as well from the young person. And I suppose, you know, not just preparation of the young person, but others that are coming to that meeting as well, to make sure it feels safe for everyone, thinking about what for that young person, what's going to help them feel safe in that meeting. Is that going to be having certain people there? Is it going to be being in a certain room? Is it going to be having a strategy that can be agreed if they want to leave the meeting? I think thinking through all those kinds of things is really important. And also sort of, I suppose, where possible, preparing the adults for that as well. So thinking about how can we talk about this in a way that is going to be safe for that young person. And that can really vary depending on the child, I think. You know, I've had some young people in meetings who absolutely can talk about lots of their needs and can hear that and discuss that. And other people who find that really hard. And actually, so maybe it's about thinking about the strengths more, or if they don't want to talk about their needs. So, you know, I think, you know, thinking about that with everyone before is really important, because I suppose you want that young person to come out of that meeting feeling like it was safe and like a comfortable space. So I suppose that's where the preparation does feel really important as part of that, and sort of having time and also planning what to say sometimes in that meeting. You know, I think when you're a young person, if you're put in a meeting mainly that might have quite a lot of adults in, then you can feel nervous, and there's those power imbalances and knowing what to say. And if you've already done a bit of that work before, then you've got sort of someone there to share that for you if you feel a bit nervous about sharing it in the meeting, and to remind you and to help you. So thinking about what might come up and what to say, I feel, is always really helpful for the child or young person. And I sort of notice that quite a lot when I'm working with young people as well, and have them in the meetings, that we tend to go through before what they want to say. And then sometimes if they're not sure in the meeting, I might say, oh, remember you told me this earlier, and then they might talk to it. And it's, you know, it's nice to see that that preparation has really helped them when they come along to that. So I think, yeah, preparation is absolutely key as part of that. And yeah, like you said as well, even thinking about that post meeting and what could be done after that meeting to keep it feeling safe and comfortable. So I suppose things like, you know, a letter or a summary or something that could be shown to the young person. I know I personally like to record things visually, so having that they could keep to remind them of what was there, or someone that they could check in with after or ask questions to, is equally as important when thinking about how to make that process, yeah, comfortable and a positive experience for that young person, so that they're not just leaving that meeting and feeling, gosh, all these things were said, I'm worried about that, I don't know what that meant. So yeah, so have it, thinking about what to do post that meeting is also really important, and that agreeing and thinking about what that could look like in that meeting is, you know, helpful as well. So thinking about who they could check in with.
One thing I was thinking about, and I suppose it's maybe a question for both of you really, about current consultation that you may be involved in, and the sort of spectrum of it being highly focused around a child's needs and what might be going on, and then that the kind of other end of that spectrum being an adult struggle with something. Now, I know they're never as sort of straightforward as that, are they? They're not one or the other, and it's a kind of a mixture of things within us. Because I guess something that I was wondering about, Anne, when you were talking, was about the capacity of everybody to be authentic with one another when we're all together, and how hard it can be for, say, for example, a teaching assistant and a teacher to feel honest and authentic with each other. If, for example, there may be, well, I'm not sure I do it that way, I don't really like how that happens, and having a meeting together and trying to own some of that and be really open with one another, adding in parents, carers, and then children and young people themselves. Yeah, I was just interested in, for both of you, do you feel like you have times when you can kind of see how it's both incredibly critical that everybody can be together and everybody can hear something, and at the same time it's possibly quite challenging to do because of the nature of, particularly when it's quite an adult focused issue, like perhaps a kind of lack of self-confidence in how to do something, or a particular struggle that one might be having in role. Yeah, I was just interested in both of you and the kinds of experiences that you've had with that sort of dimension.
Yeah, I think it, you know, it's not to say that this doesn't come, including the young person or child in a meeting, doesn't come with its challenges. Like you say, it absolutely does. And you're right, it can be about sort of thinking about how to manage that and what that might look like, and some of those things that you might want to talk about and think about, the how that maybe would might not happen in that kind of meeting, I suppose, if a young person is there. I suppose, I guess, when thinking about that, I think sometimes it can be helpful to have that young person there as part of that, because they might say, actually, this will help me and this will help me. And sometimes an adult just hearing that can actually, you know, be really helpful in thinking, you know, so for example, like I've been in meetings before, a young person has just said, well, I don't actually like getting changed change for PE, and no one had ever heard that before. But, you know, we were, maybe we wouldn't have ever thought of that if that young person wasn't there, because we wouldn't have heard that. So I suppose sometimes that can be really helpful when thinking about those strategies and how that might look. And actually, for that young person, actually, that is really important. And none of the adults might have thought that was important at all. But that can sometimes be the thing that makes the biggest difference. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think sometimes what I find helpful is giving space for some of that outside of that meeting if it's needed. And but if someone wants to ask me a question or speak about something actually around how that might work, you know, or talk about how that might work, and having that young person sometimes in that conversation, if we're saying, oh, we're not sure about this or how that could work, and actually saying, you know, how do you think that would work best, what how would you like it to be done, can be helpful. So yeah, it's a tricky one to navigate, and it involves a lot of skill. And I think then having separate spaces, you know, for people to just ask you something after, or if someone's concerned about something, can be really valuable. And I will put my hands up and say I don't involve children and young people in meetings all the time. You know, I do it, you know, where I can, and some of the time the young person might not even want to be there. And so, how, you know, there's still room for having those discussions without the young person there, if that's felt that would be the most appropriate sort of way to manage that situation.
Yeah, I think similarly to you, Anne, when like reading your thesis, I thought a lot about when I do include and when I want to include and when I don't include. And the age factor was also one that kind of stuck out to me. And I noticed that I usually only do it year five upwards. And I'm like, why do I do it year five upwards? What is it about year five that I suddenly think, right, I'm going to invite a child? And kind of managing those kind of dynamics within the room. Because Emma, as you said, you're right, there are some times where there is a teacher who might be feeling a little underconfident. I think also with parents and teachers in the room and the child, I mean, sometimes you can get some blaming going on, and you know, it's a school, and you know, it's the child's emotional regulation, and it is things that we consider about, you know, making that space safe for everyone, and how to have those conversations. And I think, Anwen, what you said about preparation is really important, but also about the relationships you have with those individual kind of people that are in that room. So I think reflecting, I tend to invite young people to feedback meetings. And I was just trying to think, why do I do that? Why don't I invite them to the initial consultations? And I guess one thing I feel better about is that I've built a relationship with that child now, and I've done some work with them, and I kind of have their view. So I've got something in my bag to go in with, but also I've also consulted with the teacher, and I've also consulted with parents, and I know their views. So it's bringing everyone together once you have a bit more of an understanding of where everyone's at and how much people can cope with maybe hearing things that they might need to change something. And I also wondered, because I find that a bit challenging in terms of like where a child might be like to their parents, well, actually, I just don't like when you say that. And I'm like, oh, what do I do now? And it's so amazing to have the young person's voice in there, but also being mindful of follow-up work that might need to be done with the parents as well, in hearing things which might be difficult for them. So in terms of preparation for the young person, but also for the adults that might need some of that follow-up. Always lovely to have everyone's voice as much as possible.
It's interesting how that age thing about, oh, you know, they're too young or developmentally too young, and then suddenly they definitely should be in, whether they can definitely make a view. What happens, and how do we set the scene? Because I suppose, Anwen, one of the things that you've highlighted really is about children's rights. And this is beyond now a sort of a values position or a preference, and into something whereby there are things that we will need to do differently. And, you know, time is very critical. It's the only resource really that we have that we can move around. And there's no time to prepare. There's no time to have these meetings. So actually, we've got to really try and balance that up with what are the rights of the people who are in this space, and how do we create situations whereby developmentally and appropriately people can be included? As you say, you know, if people were making decisions about us, I can imagine we would quite want to be there, but to have really had good, authentic, genuine experiences all the way through of being fully included, feeling really important in that. I think the other thing that I was just thinking about when both of you were talking about how skillful you need to be to manage the dynamics of having everybody. And one of the themes actually from the thematic analysis, Anwen, that you did was the importance of the facilitator seemed to have been a really strong theme that came out. Yeah, and I was just really interested in what did you kind of hear about in terms of like facilitation skill, or Were there particular techniques that people were like, this is a really good way of trying to do this? And inevitably, you know, structure can really help. It can help people manage a dynamic of something, about whether there were any structures for facilitation that your research conversation sort of identified.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it was quite individual to each educational psychologist that I spoke to, actually, and everyone liked to use a different approach, or actually thinking about even my own practice as well, like no two meetings might be the same, because it will really depend on that young person if you're thinking about how to be person-centered and what would work for them. But yeah, structure and having some sort of structure felt really important, and setting that out at the start of the meeting. So thinking when you're facilitating about where are we going. And lots of people in the research, and something I definitely do, is try and always have a visual if you can, where that is shown, and then people can visually see where you're going. I always find that funny, because I do that for when I've got a young person there, and I think, why don't I just do this even if I've not got a young person there? Because even the adults come away saying, actually, it was so helpful just to see it and see where we were going, and see sort of, you know, and if you're writing notes on that, see that being filled up as you go along. And actually it can be really helpful for everyone to sort of see that structure and know where we're going and know where that journey is going to sort of end up, and what will happen by the end of that meeting. So yeah, having that structure and perhaps some way to show that structure is really, really helpful. I suppose when thinking about different frameworks, especially in my research, lots of people did speak about some person-centered frameworks that are out there, like paths and maps or those kinds of structures where you might have a particular journey that you're going on, and different headings that you're thinking about, and quite a visual way of presenting that. And I think generally lots of people in my research spoke about, yeah, how they brought individual sort of interests and skills and training that they'd had to help them facilitate that. So, you know, I know one educational psychologist in particular, when I was interviewing them, spoke about how they used video interactive guidance quite regularly in their work, and then they were bringing that into sort of their facilitation and thinking about how to be attuned to everybody in that room and using sort of those attunement skills. And I can't remember what each educational psychologist said, but I think each of them said something different around, well, I like to use this model to help me, or, you know, I use this model because I've done that in somewhere else. But I suppose ultimately what it was helping them to do was to think about how to manage the dynamics in that room, and using those skills of sort of listening and, you know, bringing everyone into that meeting, and sort of thinking about the sort of power imbalances in that as well, and how to manage those. Because yeah, like you say, there's a lot to sort of think about in that meeting, and actually navigating that and facilitating that does take a lot of skill. You want to make sure everyone's heard, you want to make sure everyone feels comfortable. So yeah, so I think structure, visuals came out as sort of being really important and helpful in particular.
No, that's really interesting, because I think that bit there about how inevitably, probably everyone in a meeting will want, you know, somebody to say, I agree completely with what you're saying, you're absolutely right, and of course it's terrible that, you know, and the skill, yeah, like I say, and the ability to manage the dynamic of being able to be truly there for everybody, but not being seen to kind of be on a side as such. And I know not every consultation is about opposition or opposing views or conflict, but sometimes there is. And there can even be conflict within a person about how to address something, and then between people. And I was just thinking about that afterwards, about whether for both of you, what helps manage that. I'm just thinking about things like supervision. Are there reflective spaces that you feel, consultation in and of itself, obviously we should have supervision on that work, but when you're managing that level of dynamic and really want to ensure that children's rights to participation are being properly respected and having them included, what do you feel is available out there in the current practice context that helps EPs continue to develop training, anything like that, that's available to people now?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think and think about, you know, maybe what's helped me. I suppose where I work in my service, you know, we are talking about person-centered work quite a lot, and that's been helpful even going along to people's meetings, and sort of maybe someone drawing and someone facilitating that. I know that particularly has helped me, like pairing up with other educational psychologists and seeing how other people do it. has been really helpful, and then having that sort of supervision in that way and thinking about that after, and I've had someone with me and I thought, gosh, that didn't go very well, and getting to speak to them about that after and what about that, and actually sometimes hearing their views of, actually, I thought you did that quite well, things that, when you could be quite hard on yourself and talking about why that might have been or what could have helped with that. I always find that really sort of helpful in terms of pairing up and working with others. Again, there's time that becomes an issue there, but trying to do that where I can is sort of so valuable for me, I think.
I would say quite similarly, like in the family consultancy work that we do, we're in pairs, and that's always really helpful because you have another pair of eyes, and you have like a debrief or a post-reflective session where you think about, was there a voice that was heard most? Was there a voice that wasn't heard as much? And that really helps you, which is a bit like supervision, to be honest, but peer supervision. And it really helps you to think about, what was happening in the room. And I would say a lot of the TAVI group dynamics work and reading and the sessions we've had has been really helpful to think about, power imbalances and whose voice am I drawn to? Because we all have our own biases at the end of the day as well, which we need to keep in check if possible. So yeah, self-reflexivity in that sense as well, I think, is really important.
Yeah, I mentioned visuals and being visual, and you have an absolutely amazing visual in your thesis, a sort of a framework for how you might be able to include children and young people in consultation meetings. And I love us. And I was wondering if you'd just say a little bit about what prompted you to try and put it together, and have you tried using this? Have you had any feedback from people? Yeah, just any thoughts on the framework that you've created?
Yeah, if you couldn't tell, I'm a very visual person. So I love visuals and I like colour, and that always helps me. So I created sort of a visual as part of that, and thinking about what is it that we can do and what does that process look like. I suppose when I was sort of doing my research, I was thinking what led me to sort of putting that visual together, get together, was thinking about, well, what is this going to look like for people in practice, and what can people practically use that could help them? And I suppose for people listening that sort of can't see that, it sort of thinks about the four steps that might be involved in that process, but also what goes on around that. So I guess it thinks about the, what informs what we do, what theory might inform what we do, thinking about sort of being, those humanistic principles, and thinking about, putting that young person at the centre, thinking about those models of participation, like this Hart's ladder of participation, thinking about all that sort of would go around the outside. And then you might have some sort of systemic considerations again, sort of around the outside, thinking about when are young people involved in it, when are their voices heard already or not heard already, sort of in schools, training that might happen, and then sort of thinking about the four steps that might be involved in supporting you to, involve the young person in that meeting. The first one being actually making the decision about whether that's going to be the best or most appropriate thing, and maybe thinking about, what that participation could look like. I suppose one of there's Hart's model of participation, which says that we could goes up and there's different levels, and with eight being the best. But sometimes there's another model as well, which says, well, actually it might be different for each person. So I suppose thinking about those decisions, thinking about what you could do before that meeting, so in the preparation stage, what you could do within that meeting to help the young person sort of feel safe and secure, and everyone feel safe and secure, and how you could manage that meeting to make it friendly and comfortable, and then what you could do after that meeting. So those are sort of the key things that I thought about within that model. I suppose putting it into practice myself, I would say that I try and think about those stages, and perhaps I do it a bit more unconsciously now, actually, where I'm sort of going through that process of, this is what I'll do before, this is what I'll do in the meeting, and this is what I'll do after, and having those conversations, I think, with staff before around, or parents before, or whoever around, what do we think about having this young person at the meeting? Why would that be? And also even having those conversations after. Now I think about it, sometimes if someone said, oh no, I really don't think it would be appropriate, and then I've actually gone through the process and I haven't involved the young person, I thought, actually, I thought it would have been appropriate, and having those conversations after, you know, is all part of the thing, you know, sort of some of the things in making those decisions. I suppose, in terms of sort of, I haven't necessarily had any feedback on that, and it would be really great to know if people, you know, could use this and how that works in practice, especially from young people themselves. So I think it's worth mentioning that in my research, I didn't speak to young people about their experiences and, you know, reflecting on that. I wanted to do that, but I didn't manage to recruit anyone, and that could have been because it was that young people weren't being involved as much as we wanted them to be. Could have been because it was during COVID as well. So, you know, getting people's views on that would be a really great next step, I think, and how people find that. And even if that model is used by other professionals, you know, have they, you know, is that a process that they can understand? Can they find helpful? I mean, yeah, I've not got feedback on it, but it would be great.
My feedback is, I think it's I what I many things I love, but one of the big things I really like is it's situated within the system. Because I think one of the things that struck me, and I was wondering about for both of you, do you find a difference? I guess my hypothesis, and maybe it's a stereotype, is if a school has got a really good culture of participation, like there's a proper student council that does have real decision-making power, and there's a general culture around rights and participation within the school, inevitably I'm thinking, well, maybe it would be much easier to try and include children, young people in consultation in that kind of a school or setting versus somewhere else. But and your model, I think, brings that out. Like there, it can't just be that you include them in this one little thing. The systemic consideration of thinking about, well, where is their participation elsewhere? And yeah, would you guys notice a difference in the culture and ethos of the school as to maybe the adult attitudes about involve? And actually, now that I'm just even hearing myself say that, I'm also probably interested in the kind of cultural worldview. Like, if, for example, you come from a family whereby children really should do what adults say, and there should be less kind of discussion and engagement around, you know, what might happen next, does that also have a bearing on how easy or difficult it might be to include a child or young person in consultation?
Yeah, I think absolutely. In my personal experience, it does, and sort of when I work with schools that I know sort of have that culture, I can sort of feel more confident, you know, including a child or a young person, and sort of knowing sort of that they might do some of that preparation work, or you know, that young person has been involved in other meetings about them in the past. You know, that can be really helpful. And then if it's not, then I think then there's also work that you can do before you even think about involving young people in that meeting with the school, and thinking about how do we get that young person's views, how do we include them in decisions, how do we do that. You know, that can be an early stage of, you know, I think when I'm working with schools and building up relationships with them and working over time, I try and think about that, because you know, I think I've got to some schools where I'm now regularly including young people in the meeting, and they sort of invite the young person all the time, which is great. But it's been a process to get there, and it has been thinking about those cultures. And then also, I think what is quite funny as well is that actually sometimes when you start to involve the young person in those meetings, then that can influence the school culture a little bit as well, in them seeing that, oh yeah, we've involved a young person in that meeting, and then perhaps starting to see and take those approaches evolves a little bit, and then thinking about, you know, what could we do around that situation, especially with a school when you're working with them over time. I suppose family can be a bit trickier as well, with sort of seeing them on, you know, less over time, and we might see that family once or twice, whereas a school we might be working with over time. I think, yeah, I think thinking about those cultures is really helpful, but also modeling how that could work to them and helping them see how young people's views could be included more can be helpful for them to be able to do it more as well, and support that systemic sort of process.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you in terms of like the school culture. And I think there's also something in terms of like family culture, and I guess families' perspectives on how useful it would be to have their child in or not in the meeting. That's another consideration, as well as like sometimes, or from what I've seen, that parents do want a bit of a space to offload, and they don't want their children in the meeting sometimes. And it's quite hard to kind of give them some information about how it could be useful to also have the young person in the meeting. So I think there's two cultures that are interplaying in that sense, in terms of the family culture, but also the school culture. It's making me think a little bit about the UN rights schools?
That's a kind of a, is that the award scheme where you can kind of become accredited according to how much involvement children and young people have when it's mapped against the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child? I've seen some schools advertise outside, you know, what kind of, I don't know what the grading system is in there. Because I suppose I think Emma's made a really good point about it's not a one way, it could work the other way as well, that by having this one example of inclusion that works really well, you could advance something, and equally you can have a, as again, I suppose it's also making me think about that working at the different levels, that there's this overarching theme of whether you're working individually with a group or with the whole system, if you're coming with that value around children, young people's right to participate, then the scope of the work that you can do, I think it's such an exciting thing about being an EP, you know, that you could help develop the school's policy on, you know, participation and engagement, in as much as you can do some really interesting individual level work. And it doesn't have to be one or the other.
It's just making me think, Emma, of a quite interesting example recently where I was doing some more systemic work with a school and thinking about the provision that they offer, and they were wanting to develop their provision maps. And I said they were specifically talking about pupils with ADHD. And I sort of, yeah, I guess I didn't realise I was doing it, but thinking about that and influencing the culture, I said, how about you do some focus groups with the young people who have ADHD and ask them what they think would help them in school. So I don't, until you've said that, I don't think I realised that I was actually sort of doing that. But I guess it's working systemically, but also thinking about participation for those young people. Yeah, I'm thinking about how to do that within other pieces of work as well, not just within those individual pieces of casework, I suppose. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I think generally now, like my experience of kind of adolescents and young adults is of a hugely socially engaged group of people who want to be heard and want to be well represented in multiple levels of whether it's what uniform I wear, what do I do in the evening, what kind of exams I will have for to do or should have to do or not do, to kind of broader issues around social justice and how we should be in community with one another. And they have some really, I mean, that I think that point I'm on about somebody saying, like, I don't like getting changed for PE. We will never know unless we ask and unless we listen to other people about what actually would make a difference. And like you say, that might not have ever occurred to somebody. But when a young person said, well, that would be the thing that would make a massive difference for me, it's not about buying in loads of resources or having to do, but that one thing would really make a difference for me. Yeah, there's just such power in taking up the role of an EP with that kind of rights perspective in mind. Pretty energizing. I'm kind of sitting here thinking, oh, I'd like to do this and maybe I could do that. And as I'm thinking also about how, you know, even as a training program, we need to be including everybody, our service users. And is there something about this model that you have here could be, I mean, obviously with your permission, something like, you know, that could be adapted and developed, that you could be thinking about how might we be able to include people better and prepare, you know, you've got that bit about decision-making considerations. You've got the bit about the pre-meeting. You've got the bit about the follow-up. It's not just about having them in there and in a performative way, it is proper and authentic. That, yeah, I think it's a really exciting thing that you've done, and a very timely thing that you've done too. As we come to kind of towards the end, Zara and I always will ask if there was one thing that you read when you were doing your thesis, Anwen, or something that you've read since that you've thought, gosh, I really would love if people could read this book article or book chapter article piece. Yeah. Is there anything that you would say, this is my go-to, it really changed my perspective?
Yeah. And it's hard to pick one thing sometimes, isn't it? I suppose. And I'm trying to think of what I would suggest. I'm going to just look it up because... There was one model that really helped my understanding of participation and thinking about participation, and that there is Hart's ladder, of course, but there was another model that's based on that that I found really helpful to think about, which I mentioned earlier about sort of that it doesn't have to be rungs and a hierarchy, and that actually participation might depend on that particular sort of situation, or, you know, and that is Tressida's.
Yeah. Tressida's one. Yeah. It's not the ladder, is it? It's more of a kind of, you can do it in degrees and it doesn't have to be like you have to progress in a linear way. Was that helpful?
Yeah, I found that really helpful in helping me sort of think about, instead of this being a hierarchy of, well, we're always aiming for the young person to be in leading and making those decisions, and for it to be sort of, for that to be the one best thing. In fact, thinking of it as sort of, like you say, those degrees of, and levels instead, and actually thinking it helped me to think about, well, you know, it might be actually that this degree of participation is better for this situation than that one, and that's more appropriate because of the situation. I think that really helped my understanding and thinking around participation and young people being sort of, you know, being included. So yeah, that's one thing I think I found most helpful.
Thank you so much for sharing that, and indeed for coming on and sharing your research and your work.
It's really nice to hear though as well, because, you know, sort of when I was several years ago now, when I was starting out on this, I really wanted to have a piece of research that people could use and feel that it was important and helpful. And it's nice to hear that you sort of feel that that is, and that there's helpful
Absolutely.
Things that can be taken away from that.